Welcome to New Mexico in Focus, the podcast for Monday, July 17th, 2023. I'm Lou DeVizio. This week on the show, we wrap up our assessment of journalism in New Mexico with two more panel discussions. First, you'll hear a conversation between Gene Grant and two Black journalists who share their perspective on how Black issues are covered in a state with such a diverse population. And after that, Gene sits down with three news consumers to ask what we need to fix within our own industry. But first, let's start with some headlines. An Alamogordo police officer has died after a shootout with a man who was previously involved with police in a different altercation involving a gun in late January. Anthony Ferguson, a 41-year-old police officer and 11-year veteran of the Alamogordo Police Department, was serving as a field training officer when he attempted to pull over Dominic De La O early Saturday morning. Police say De La O was driving with no headlights or taillights and that he sped off and crashed into a light pole when they tried to pull him over. We're told he ran from the car, pulled off a concealed sawed-off shotgun, and shot at officers who then returned fire. Officer Ferguson was hit in the face by a shotgun blast, and De La O was shot in the leg. De La O is in custody, and Officer Ferguson has died. Now, Alamogordo Mayor Susan Payne is questioning why De La O was released from custody after an incident earlier this year when police shot him twice in the back after he allegedly pulled a handgun on officers during an altercation. De La O now faces charges including attempted first-degree murder and aggravated battery on a police officer with a deadly weapon. Jury selection has begun in the trial of former University of New Mexico athletic director Paul Krebs. Krebs faces two felony embezzlement charges stemming from allegations that he used public money for a 2015 golf trip to Scotland that he said was meant to strengthen relationships with donors. Those two charges are all that remain after Attorney General Raul Torres dismissed four others last month. Torres's predecessor, Hector Balderas, initially filed all six charges back in 2019. At the time, he said they represented a national trend towards greater accountability for officials at public institutions. The first of the remaining two charges accuses Krebs of spending $24,500 of athletic department money for golf tours for three people not affiliated with the university or the UNM Association. The second claims Krebs used more than $13,000 in university funds to reimburse the Lobo Club for a golf tour package after Lobo Club funds were used to pay a deposit to a travel company. The trial is scheduled to last 5 days. The New Mexico Secretary of State's office confirms that sometime in the last few months, Maggie Toulouse Oliver has spoken with federal prosecutors as part of the special counsel's probe into the 2020 election and the riot that followed on January 6, 2021. The Associated Press reports Special Counsel Jack Smith and his team have issued subpoenas to election officials in states that Trump disputed, and have also lined up interviews with other state officials. We don't know what questions were asked of Toulouse Oliver, but we know that Trump's campaign briefly challenged Biden's 11-point win in court before dropping the lawsuit. Republicans in the state also submitted false Electoral College certificates declaring Trump the winner. It's not clear when the special counsel's investigation into the run-up to the January 6, 2021 riot might end, or whether anyone will be charged. We know that New Mexico has a rich cultural fabric, but narratives like the tricultural myth have sometimes meant that stories and voices from the Black community get left out. That goes for news as much as anything else. It's something we wanted to talk about with two African-American journalists. Joining Gene Grant over Zoom are Adolphe Pierre-Louis, who spent years working as a photojournalist for the Albuquerque Journal, and Ron Wallace, publisher of The Perspective magazine. Here's Gene.
Now, guys, we really wanted to get into how the reporting on Black issues locally fares, especially when it comes to policy and decision-making. But let me start with some background on each of you and the work that you've done. Ron, you operate one of the longest continuously running Black publications in the region. Why has your publication lasted so long? I'm so curious to hear you talk about this.
Oh, a lot of it, Gene, was dedication. It's just dedicated to and commitment to the community that we the commitment we had, the people that worked with me and myself. It was just important for us to always do things with the community's success and you know, at the forefront. And then you had other people who were doing things like Adolph and Teal Van Bland, and who would also be supportive of what you were doing. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of the community knowing the need of what we wanted to do and how we wanted to present the African-American community mm-hmm. in the state of New Mexico, because that my hands were untied. Everybody else had hands that were tied that they had to work within the confines of their, you know, of the station. Mm-hmm. And in the perspective, we had a full range of what we wanted to present mm-hmm. as far as how our community circulated and how we nurtured each other.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I should have asked, what year did the perspective start? What year did you launch?
Oh, goodness, I think we launched the perspective in 1984.
Right. It's a while ago. You're still here. Good stuff. Adolph, let me bounce to you for a quick sec. Photojournalism is a term we sort of take for granted in our collective understanding. From your perspective, what exactly is photojournalism, in quotes there, to you, and what responsibilities does that carry as a photojournalist?
Well, as a photojournalist, my job has always been to tell stories. I use my cameras to tell stories about this community. I've been fortunate to live here for the last 33 years. Mm-hmm. And I feel that a lot of time, especially the African-American community here in New Mexico, is not represented mm-hmm. in the media mm-hmm. in terms of personnel, but also in terms of coverage. And I feel it's very important that we cannot claim to be a community newspaper if we don't cover a community. Right. I feel strongly about that.
Is what you're saying, is a black focused newspaper the way to fill those gaps?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe so, because it's more targeted toward that community. And I feel that having that kind of coverage is very important.
Ron, in your years of publishing The Perspective, what have you found that black folks want to read, basically? What's the biggest reason folks pick up the your publication?
Well, the reason The Perspective was so important to the community is because we got the stories that nobody else would cover, that the major networks didn't see as important. Mm-hmm. But they were important for our community to highlight our young people, to highlight the seniors in our community when things are happening. Mm-hmm. And so they might not have been important enough for all of New Mexico to get, but it was important that we didn't remain invisible. And for our young people to see us and to see the accomplishments, it was important for them to see us all the time, mm-hmm. not just every now and then. Mm-hmm. They needed to see us and know that we were doing things all the time, and for their accomplishments to also be valued. And so what I felt The Perspective had the opportunity to show the value of our community without having to choose between, oh, goodness, is this story more important than that one? We could talk about what we were doing. Mm-hmm. We could talk about our accomplishments. And that was a blessing to me to be able to have that opportunity to be able to present our community for what it was. And we were valuable. Mm-hmm. And like the saying goes, they said New Mexico need to be visible, valuable, and you know, and accessible. Mm-hmm. So those are the things we needed to make sure people were seeing us as. Mm-hmm. How we were visible and how we were valuable to what was going on in the community of in the Albuquerque whole, mm-hmm. and how we contributed. Mm-hmm. So that was important, and it didn't matter, you know, for me, it wasn't work. It was an opportunity, and it was a pleasure to present our community for what it was, and that fact that we were very positive, made very positive contributions. Mm-hmm. And as our businesses got to be, have more black businesses, we were able to highlight the businesses, because we did have a business community in the state of New Mexico, mm-hmm. and they needed some visibility as well.
Mm-hmm. Ron, real quick, you know, you've been such a strong voice for years on the importance of showcasing young black achievement. And I want to note particularly graduation season. It's sort of like the number one pickup of your publication to see who's doing what where. Why was that important to you to highlight graduation season especially?
For one, it was good for the students to have their pictures taken and to feel important about the accomplishment they just had. And so, yeah, we would go and take pictures of the Black student graduates, and we contract with APS to get them those pictures and in a video fashion, because it was important for the students to know that, hey, somebody's very excited about what we did. Mm-hmm. They're very excited about us being able to graduate and to go on to do other, additional things in life.
I've always wondered why the local papers didn't look at you and pick up on that, because I'm telling you, you want your newspaper picked up, highlight some high school students graduating. You'll get a lot of papers
exactly.
moved. It's an amazing thing. Adolph, let me go back to something serious here in your life, of course, which was in 2011, New Mexico State police officer illegally pulled you over, held you at gunpoint, made you sit on your knees with handcuffs behind your back while traffic was going by on the highway. You were driving a journal vehicle. You were wearing your press credentials while this all happened. Now, you settled the case. And years later, of course, and a part of that, the judge ordered that you be allowed to speak to police cadets about that experience. And you've been one of the few very long-time Black journalists in the state for years. How did that illegal traffic stop inform your experience here?
Well, I deal with police all the time.
Yeah.
When I was working for the journal, because, I show up at a crime scene, I need to get information. So I have to be able to talk to a PIO or the police chief and figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. And that experience hasn't changed my view of police, but it also taught me a valuable lesson that it's important that officers not only learn how to use discretion, but also they have to do their job, which is to figure out a description of a subject before embarking on a chase. And me going up to the academy to talk to those cadets up there has been an amazing experience. Hmm. Last April, I went up there and I was supposed to be up there for about an hour. I ended up spending almost 2.5 hours
Wow.
teaching a class that had 62 cadets in it, the largest class ever. And it's important for me to open that channel of communication between law enforcement and media, but more than that, and the general public in general. This is more than just media.
Sure.
It's a general public. I guess my view is that I've had several police chiefs since then approach me and thank me for making all those officers better officers in terms of educating them about unconscious bias, about attention to details, because the gentleman that they were looking for was a 5'2" Hispanic guy, bald, wearing black basketball short and a white t-shirt.
Right.
And that did not match my description whatsoever.
Not even
and
close. Right.
Search. And so what I teach them is when I go up to Santa Fe at the academy to teach those officers, I tell them, make sure you take notes. Make sure you ask specific questions before taking off and embarking on a chase. And you don't even know who you're looking for.
Right.
You cannot just go by a make and color of a car. You have to make sure you ask, well, the subject that I'm looking for, what's his race? How old is he? What is he wearing? Does he have any tattoos? Does he have any particular sign on his body that I need to be looking for? So all those important details that, in my case, were completely missed. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, what makes it more rewarding is to get the reaction from those cadets up there, from those police officers, when I go up there to talk to them, because they really, really appreciate the job that I've been doing with them, teaching them how to do their job, mm-hmm. basically.
Interesting. Got last question for the both of you. I'm going to stay with you, Adolf, for this one. What can Black journalists here do better to serve the needs of Black New Mexicans? And let me ask you to factor this in as well. In your view, is tech a factor in this? Is that something that can help us in getting things out there about the African-American community? But basically, what can reporters, Black reporters, do better here?
Well, offer more coverage. Mm-hmm. We live in a community where we have a lot of stories happening. And as a photojournalist, I never want to go down to the South Valley when there's homicide.
Right.
If there is something positive happening in a community, that's our duty to go out there and cover it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was very fortunate that I started my career at the New York Daily News in New York. And I got to work with Jimmy Breslin.
Oh, wow.
Mike Lupica. Wow. Bob Herbert. And those guys, they were personal friends of mine. Mm-hmm. I got to sit down and talk to them. Jimmy Breslin always tell me, Adolf, you're a young journalist. If you want to really get a story, go on site. Get to smell what your subject is smelling. Get to see what they're seeing. Get to experience what conditions that they're living in, mm-hmm. because that will allow you to tell a better story about what you're trying to inform your readers on. Mm-hmm. And that in itself has always been my motto.
Yeah.
Good coverage, 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 offer more coverage. And I think, you know, to me, it's not acceptable that something can be happening right here in Albuquerque. Instead of having the journal cover it, we have AP covering it.
Right.
I don't think that's possible. You know what I mean? We are a local newspaper. We need to concentrate on covering the community. And the same goes for the African-American community. If there is something happening, that needs coverage, because it's not when something bad happens that you show up and you want to cover that community. You know, if there are positive things happening, it's, as journalists, it's our duty to cover that too.
Mm-hmm. Good points there. Ron, same question to you. What can we, as Black journalists, what can we be doing better, but also tech and online, the internet, what's your sense of that and how that can help in this endeavor?
Yeah, Gene, that was where we were leading to, was getting everything electronically.
Right.
As well as the physical existence when we did the magazines was just so we were documented. Mm-hmm. And so people can keep those. And I got that idea from, excuse me, talking to a publisher from Jet Magazine. And they were talking about how the magazine would always, for African Americans, they put them on their coffee table, they mm-hmm. keep them as keepsakes. So that was why the publishing of the Perspective magazine was so important. And that was why the presentation we put out was so important. We wanted to make sure that it was something people were proud of and that they would keep. And we knew that if we remained paper, that would go away. Mm-hmm. But that's why we went to the glossy, we went to the magazines, and we had several different magazine looks, trying to get the one that we wanted our community to make sure our community was proud of the presentation. Mm-hmm. And not like, you know, Adolf, I've always appreciated Adolf and Van Tate and all of the, and yourself, people who were on TV, because for me, you were all assets for me. Mm-hmm. And you were anomalies in New Mexico, because there were very few Blacks that were on, you know, and when they were seeing you telling our story, you became a story for me.
Right.
And you guys were stories for me, because when we were, I was blessed to have to be able to just, I could just focus on the African-American community because everybody else was covering everything else. So I didn't have to worry about, oh, golly, what's going on in the Hispanic or the white community that I need to tell our community. They get that. Mm-hmm. It was our stories that were being that were not being told, because it wasn't important enough for them to put it into the mainstream, you know, but they were important stories for our community. So I had the privilege of being able to do what we were accomplishing in our community and not have to worry about everybody else's story, although sometimes the story would cross over because it would affect our community or something like that. Mm-hmm. But we were able to focus clearly on the Black community because everything else was being told. And so that was good for me. And I mean, that was good that I had that and I didn't have to worry about, oh my goodness, are they going to tell that story? Mm. I could tell a story that the main media was telling as well, but I was capturing the stories they were not telling because right. they did not make their grade as far as they were concerned. But our community needed to know that, hey, we appreciate this. We appreciate that. And like when you talk about being able to capture the students, graduating students, that's important. But that we wouldn't see them, they wouldn't have that coverage.
That's right.
Or that exposure in the mainstream. So we, you know, I count it a blessing to be able to do what we were able to do. And hopefully we'll be able to put something best else back out there for our community. Because we were getting ready to have a television station and have a show on one of the city states that were giving us some space before I had to leave. And hopefully I'll be able to come back and we can pick all that stuff back up and actually have another venue mm-hmm. and also set back up. I don't know whether we'll print again. I think Kathy is doing some things that is bringing the print back. But I do know that there's somewhere where I'm going to be working and getting everything back mm-hmm. once I get back to, you know, get over the illness that I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. But it's a privilege and a blessing to be able to do the things that we do to tell about our community. And like I said, you guys are so important because you have spots that get, you know, you're out there and you're covering our community as well in different venues, mm-hmm. different stations, different things that now everybody's getting it. And so it was a pleasure for me to say, hey, I know we're getting them out there with the people who are already on TV, Gene, Adolph, Tia, and you know, and those, so it was good to already have a team already out there that were already in position. Mm-hmm. And then I could just focus on the Black community and just pick up the stories that, you know, I need to make sure that we got out there for our community to make the value, make mm-hmm. the feeling of the value, know that, hey, what we're doing is so important. And yes, and what we're doing, we're going to talk about it.
I love it.
And it won't get lost.
This is a great thing to end on. When your health gets better, you got a whole team ready to go behind you. You do know that when the TV thing starts, we'll commit our help over here for that endeavor as well. I'll just do it for the management here. That's just how these things go. But whatever you might need to get that going again, Ron Wallace. And then Adolph, thank you very much for your perspectives as well. I know it's difficult to talk about your own situation with that state police thing, so we really appreciate your time. But to the both of you, thank you both for talking about this with us. I know it's not an easy thing to wrap our arms around, but the more we do talk about it, the better off we will all be across the state of New Mexico. So thank you both very, very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Gene.
Now for our final panel in our series of interviews focused on the state of journalism in New Mexico. To this point, you've heard from newspaper owners, newsroom leaders like news directors and editors, and a publisher and photojournalist. But we know we can't get a full picture of the state's journalism ecosystem without shifting our perspective to look from the outside in. That's why for this final panel, we've gathered a group of informed news consumers, people who aren't journalists, but who regularly watch, read, and listen to local stories happening around the state. Gene's joined at the table by Catherine McGill, founder and director of the New Mexico Black Leadership Council, Maureen Sanders, an attorney at Sanders and Westbrook, and a student studying political science at the University of New Mexico, Almarina Sosa.
Now, starting things off, guys, I'm curious to know how each of you catch up with the news. Meaning, do you watch your local news station? Do you have a go-to newspaper or online publication? Kathleen, let me start with you. I know it's a very tricky question for you because you've been an news junkie for 30 dang years that I've known you. Yeah. So to ask you what's your go-to is kind of odd, but give us a sense of how you do your news sweep, like say in the morning. What does it encompass?
I would say like a hodgepodge, you know, and we all have these phones now where you can, you know, ask it to tell you the news. And so it tells me, you know, what's going on in the morning, and I listen for as long as I can. And then I read the Washington Post, and, you know, you're reading different columns. So I have a whole toolkit of places that I go to for news. Mm-hmm. And then I listen, I read for as long as I can.
As a percentage, how much is local, how much is national when you start your day?
I would say that it's probably 60-40.
Okay.
Local,
yeah,
national.
Yeah, I hear you. Maureen, welcome. It's been a while. Good to see you. I'm sure as an attorney, you were a news watcher, certainly. I'm curious, how do you do the thing this way?
Actually, I became a news junkie after I became an attorney, and I was working for Judge Meacham at the federal court here in Albuquerque, and I noticed that the Rio Grande Sun was showing up every week, and I said, what is this? And he said, it's the only way I can find out what's going on in northern New Mexico, and I need to know what's going on in northern New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And he would come in every day, and he would have read, you know, the Albuquerque Journal and the Rio Grande Sun and start talking about it. And I thought, okay, he's teaching me something here. And so for my business, it's really important, to me at least, to know what's going on.
Sure.
Because it gives context to my cases.
Okay. I should have asked you previously, I apologize, what kind of cases do you work on?
Just so context. Historically, most of my cases have been commercial litigation or insurance matters. And then I have a great deal of experience in civil rights, both in federal and state level.
All three or four of those things, you do have to watch the news closely for
absolutely.
All of those. Absolutely. Almarina, welcome, and congratulations on what you've accomplished so far. Three cheers for poli-sci students, yes, and indeed. I'm curious, you know, we have a bit of a generational difference here, certainly not to put you on the spot, but I'm curious how you get your news. What's your news gathering day like as well?
Yeah, so I think that it's very much digitalized. I don't know if that's, it's fair to say for the general population in my age range, but I would definitely say that it is a mix of local and national media coverage, whether that be through apps or just scrolling through social media.
Right.
I try to stay away from that just because I know of all of the nuances that come with social media. I'm very much aware of that.
Very well done there, Brad. It's a poli-sci student. The nuances of social media. Very well done there.
Thank you. No, but definitely via different apps, I'd say, is how I mainly get my news sources.
Marina, on that point about apps and things, do you feel like you have a relationship with your news organizations? Meaning, if you wanted to make something known to your local folks, would you have the gumption to actually call somebody and say, I can reach somebody over there and get a story going?
I would say so. Yeah. I believe that it's very important to vocalize your opinions and thoughts, and I think that there are definitely certain channels in which that is able to be done through.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as just calling someone and being able to voice your opinion, whether that is through call or email or just through social media, is definitely something that I feel comfortable with, and I think that is very accessible to me and to the general population as well.
Interesting perspective. I appreciate that. I do want to go around the table on this next one. Maureen, you answered this just a little bit, but I want to get under the skin here a little bit. I want to know how these news organizations affects your professional lives, folks. Starting, Maureen, how did this journalism impact or inform, if you can, not just your shop, but the entire legal community? What's the relationship there, and why is it important?
I think it's important for the legal profession because, you know, for all of our cases, those of us who do litigation, there's a context for it. And so it's important, if I'm going to sue a particular county commission, it's important for me to know that this county commission has a long history of doing bad things, in my view? Or is this just a one-off? And so context is really important for the civil litigation side. Unfortunately, I think most of the media focuses on the criminal side, and that, you know, that one, it's not my interest, but it also isn't a context situation. It's, you know, it's this particular person did this particular crime. Right. And so for those in the civil side of litigation, it's really important to have a context and know the players, you know, and you can't know the players if the media and the papers are not doing the stories.
That's right. Yeah. It's an important point about why a newspaper archive is so important.
That's right.
It's not just the daily stuff, but that archive can have so much value for research, as you're mentioning, Maureen.
Right. And I was, you know, I was really saddened to hear that, you know, the journals no longer, archives are no longer available locally. And, you know, I know that they mentioned newspapers.com, and I looked, and it costs money to go to newspapers.com. And for me, that's a disservice, because I want to be able, I remember a case once where I had this, a stack of this many articles that were relevant to the case. So during the deposition, I said, here, can you tell me which of the, which quote, if any, in this stack of you, you know, quote by you, is inaccurate, you know? And so that gave me a way to test what the person was saying.
Sure, I can see that completely. Mm-hmm. That's an excellent description. You know, Kathy, your position is unique, certainly, and I gotta ask, you know, you have a working relationship with the press that you've had for years because of your position at the New Mexico Black Leadership Council. I'm curious, the feedback loop that you work with, are you feeling like you're heard? Does your phone calls get picked up? Is there perspective on black issues coming from the other end of the line with questioning? How does this work when you deal with local press people?
You know, I'd say it's a mixed bag.
Okay.
And, you know, what we've had to do is knock on the doors and say, we want to partner with you to make sure that you get the stories you need and that you're accurately depicting what's happening in our community and that you're doing it fairly and equitably. I want to give an example. Just last year, we do a lot of work in the International District, and so we decided that we were doing Pomoja 5K Race for Equity. We had, you know, we brought together residents from the International District, people from outside, from the larger community, and did it right in the heart of the International District with the symbology of we're literally walking our talk and, you know, we're out here in these streets and they belong to us. Change the narrative so that we could see ourselves differently. So I'm pretty good at pitching stories, sending out news release. We do all the same things that we always do to get things covered. And nobody wanted to do it. We don't have enough people on Sunday. You know, we don't have the staff. You know, I'm calling saying, who are you sending? And it was really challenging. Adolph, who you know and just interviewed, I've known for, you know, more than three decades, and I know that I could call Adolph and say, Adolph, it's happening again. You know, they're not coming. And on his day off, you know, he came to take a photo to get placed. And had it not been for that, it would have been, you know, just a sprinkling of coverage. And it was a really, really good thing. But the people who decide what a news story is are deciding that it's lower priority. Later that day, and I'm talking about 4 hours later, there was an incident that involving a shooting down the street from where we were in the neighborhood. It was an isolated incident, I think. But everybody was out there.
Yeah.
On the same day. And so we wrote about it in our own paper that we started because we couldn't get the kind of coverage we need.
Right. I that's an interesting story. I can relate to that. You know, Marina, interestingly, the data I'm seeing from Pew Research Center, young people, Gen Z and younger millennials, not all one big bucket, certainly, consume the most online news, but they also have the lowest polled emotional trust of national news. Would you does that resonate with you as in this age cohort as well, that, you know, local stuff's one thing, national news is a whole other thing altogether?
Mm-hmm. Personally, I don't think that I share that same sentiment, but it has been expressed to me via just people in my same age range of that general distrust of the media. I think given the fact that so much of it isn't filtered and that it isn't necessarily coming from a place of reliability, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I think that in general, that data seems to line up with my general experience mm-hmm. as far as media goes with my age range.
Let me ask you a question. I, again, I'm not asking you to speak for your generation. That's actually a very unfair thing to do, mm-hmm. just you at this table.
Yeah.
So you're speaking from your heart, and that's interesting. And I'm just curious, is it important to you to know how a news organization is funded? Because we talked about that a lot with our two-part series here over the last couple of weeks. That is an important part of this. For yourself, does that mean something to know how they're funded?
Yes, it definitely does. And mm-hmm. I think that whenever I am consuming media, I do it in a way that is from a reputable source. And I do put in the effort to put forth the research mm-hmm. as to who is funding and who is guiding whatever media coverage that is being put out. So I think that is definitely something that, at least for me, resonates with me as far as my daily consumption of media, even though I think it's important to look at media in every different facet that it comes in.
Mm-hmm. Good point there, too. Maureen, like I said, you've dealt with journalists for years, decades, I should say. In that time, you've seen newsrooms shrink. You've seen them vanish altogether. You've seen a lot. What has that meant to you in the industry that has changed the relationship with reporters, possibly, with these specialized beats like the courthouse stuff? That's a specialized beat.
Absolutely.
And you have a chance to really get some background or conversations with mm-hmm. those kind of reporters.
Right.
That might be gone now.
It is gone, and yeah. It's unfortunate. I was thinking about it as you were talking in terms of, you know, it used to be that Scott Sandlin from the Journal mm-hmm. did the federal court beat.
Yes.
And so she knew the cases. She was over at that court every day, yep. and she would look at every complaint filed. And so she knew which ones had a systemic, important aspect to it. Mm-hmm. And she would follow them. And so when she called me about something in a case that's been pending for 30 or 40 years, and I'm not exaggerating, mm-hmm. those are real, she had the background, and so she could say, I just need clarification on what this order means.
Right.
At the same time, I'm getting a call from somebody regarding the Amat water case that's been pending for 40 years, and they go, my editor just said there was an order. Could you tell me what it was about, and could you give me the history? And I go, no, I'm not going to talk to that person, or at least I'll talk to him and answer a question, but I'm not going to give him the background.
Right.
If it's somebody I know and trust, and they do need some background, I'll say, let's go off the record. Yeah. Let me give you the background, and then we can go back on the record, and, you know, because I want to help them have the right information, and they're not looking for just a soundbite. I mean, mm-hmm. I'll give them a soundbite at the end, but they have to listen to my lecture first.
Exactly. That's an excellent ending note there. And that is very illustrative of that relationship that can happen mm-hmm. with an industry and reporters when we have the manpower, woman power to take the time and sit down and listen.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's a hard thing to find a time to do. That's just sit and listen and learn.
Thanks to everyone who contributed to the podcast this week, including our new local news fellow, Justine Collister, who helped me with some of the headline scripting today. We're really excited to have her on the team. I also want to give a final thank you to all of you who are listening to the podcast as we wrap up our special series, Analyzing Journalism in Our State. As I said last week, we can't do our jobs properly unless we hear from you, so keep the comments coming on social media. Check out our pages on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. You can give us feedback or just stay up to date as we post previews and news items leading up to our show on Friday night. Thanks again, everyone. I'm Senior Producer Lou DeVizio for Friday, July 17th, 2023. This is New Mexico in Focus, the podcast. Have a great week, everyone.